Well, thank you all for coming this Lord's Day. We will be discussing a little bit more concerning the dragon in Revelation chapter 12 today. This will get us back into Daniel again and actually get us into 1 Maccabees today, which will be very interesting as well. Revelation 12, and actually let me just go back into chapter 11. Just remind us that we are in the time of the seventh trumpet blowing. So we'll begin with verse 15 of Revelation chapter 11. And the seventh angel sounded, and there were great voices in heaven, saying, The kingdoms of this world are become the kingdoms of our Lord and of his Christ, and he shall reign forever and ever. And the 24 elders which sat before God on the seats fell upon their faces and worshipped God, saying, We give thee thanks, O Lord God Almighty, which art and wast and art to come, because thou hast taken to thee thy power, thy great power, and hast reigned. And the nations were angry, and thy wrath is come, and the time of the dead that they should be judged, and that thou shouldest give reward unto thy servants the prophets, and to the saints, and to them that fear thy name, small and great, and shouldest destroy them which destroy the earth. And the temple of God was opened in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of his testament, and there were lightnings, and voices, and thunderings, and an earthquake, and great hail. And there appeared a great wonder in heaven, woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and upon her head a crown of 12 stars. And she being with child cried, travailing in birth, and pain to be delivered. And there appeared another woman in heaven, and behold, another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon, having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his heads. And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and did cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born. And she brought forth a man-child, who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up unto God and to his throne. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she hath a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. And there was war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon fought and his angels, and prevailed not, neither was their place found any more in heaven. And the great dragon was cast out, the old serpent, called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. He was cast out into the earth, and his angels were cast out with him. And I heard a loud voice saying in heaven, Now is come salvation and strength, and the kingdom of our God, and the power of his Christ. For the accuser of our brethren is cast down, which accused them before our God day and night. And they overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, by the word of their testimony, and they loved not their lives unto the death. Therefore rejoice, ye heavens, and ye that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil is come unto you having great wrath, because he knoweth that he hath but a short time. May the Lord bless the reading of his word to our hearts today. If we look back again at verse 3, and there appeared another wonder in heaven, and behold, a great red dragon having 7 heads and 10 horns and 7 crowns upon his heads. We spoke about this last time. The 7 heads refer to the 7 mountains, which has the 7 capital cities, which refers to the 7 empires, which support the woman in chapter 17, which is Babylon. So these are 7 empires that supported Babylon, the city of Babylon. It also refers to the seven kings of those empires. And so we mentioned that, as I count them, Assyria was the first, Babylon, Medo-Persia, Seleucid Empire, and then the Parthian Empire. All those had fallen already by the time John gives his prophecy. The one that was at the time of John's prophecy was Rome, so that was the sixth. And then the one that yet was to come, but would only be for a short time before it left Babylon in ruins, was the Sassanid Empire, and the Antichrist eventually would be the eighth that supports the city of the rebuilt Babylon when that does happen. I thought one verse that we should take note of back in Daniel chapter 2, verse 8, would also help us understand a little bit by what it means by seven kings. But obviously, there are more than just seven kings throughout these empires, Assyria and Babylon and so forth. But when we go back to Daniel chapter 2 and the prophecy of the idol there, so verse 38, where it says, "Thou art this head of gold," very last phrase of verse 38. So he refers to one king specifically, Nebuchadnezzar himself, that was right in front of him, as the head of gold. Obviously, there was more kings to come in Babylon, but he makes mention just of Nebuchadnezzar himself as the one representing the whole kingdom. And of course, this is common language for us as we speak of kingdoms. We may speak of the capital city, like Washington, D.C. did this, and we know that it's not the city that does it, but the whole nation essentially is doing it, can represent the whole nation, it can represent the president of the capital city or the king of such a city. And we commonly use this type of language for our capitals, as our generals, our presidents, as representative of more than just themselves. They represent the whole nation, or the nation represents them, or such language. So this is all in accordance with what we commonly speak about. Then the ten horns of the dragon were the ten kings that the Antichrist would rule with in the future. And the seven crowns on the heads of the dragon emphasized particularly this progressive movement of empires that the dragon had sway over. And so not just one empire, but this whole movement that's against God and in support of the wicked city of Babylon. The beast, as we also noted, would have the crowns upon the horns, making special emphasis upon the kings that would rule with him. And so we come then to verse 4 in chapter 12, Revelation 12:4, where it says, "And his tail drew the third part of the stars of heaven, and it cast them to the earth. And the dragon stood before the woman, which was ready to be delivered, for to devour her child as soon as it was born." So the tail drawing the third part of the stars. As we already mentioned, many take this to be a reference to the beginning of creation, essentially, when the dragon, Satan, led a rebellion against God, and he took a third of the angels, the holy angels, and led them into rebellion, a third of them, against God. But as you know, I've taken issue with that, and based on Daniel chapter 8, which we will get to in just a little bit. This this description, though, has the devil in heaven still, as he's able to draw a third part of the stars of heaven because he's still in the heavens. We're going to see in verse 7 and following that there is finally a war where he is cast out of heaven, but that has not happened as of yet in verse 4. And this description of the devil as being in heaven reminds us of Ephesians 2:2, where Paul calls the devil the prince of the power of the air. He has influence in heaven even at this time. God has a court set up, and in that court, as we see in the book of Job, there are many that come. The sons of God come and gather before the Lord, and the devil, on those appointed occasions, will come also at that time. In Revelation 12, we see that what he does at that time is he accuses the brethren. Day and night he accuses the brethren. And so he's not there pretending to be a virtuous person at all. He is there very clearly attacking us in the presence of the Lord. But he is still in heaven, and he still has power and influence to some degree in heaven. Other descriptions of the devil, which certainly are not the usual descriptions, Jesus three times, maybe four, I think, refers to him as the prince of this world. And Paul in 2 Corinthians 4:4 calls him the god of this world. And 1 John 5:19, Satan is said to have influence in this world. And these descriptions show authority that the devil has in the midst of this world and even in the midst of the nations and even in the midst of heaven to some degree. So when we look back at Daniel chapter 10, verse 13, Daniel chapter 10, verse 13, an interesting passage because it refers to the prince of Persia and the prince of Greece, but helps us to see a little bit into the spiritual world and understand how it has authority in the world in which we live. So Daniel chapter 10, verse 13, this is the man in the linen robe that speaks with Daniel on this occasion, is about to give the prophecy of chapter 11 with the kings of the north and the south and a very long war that he describes, ultimately leading to what it describes about the Antichrist in chapter 11, but I understand this to be Jesus Christ, but he says in verse 13, well, I'll read verse 12. Then he said unto me, Fear not, Daniel, for from the first day that thou didst set thine heart to understand and to chasten thyself before thy God, thy words were heard, and I am come forth, come for thy words. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia withstood me 21 days. But lo, Michael, one of the chief princes, came to help me, and I remained there with the kings of Persia. Now if we go down to verse 20, where it says, Then said he, Knowest thou wherefore I come unto thee? And now will I return to fight with the prince of Persia? And where I am, when I am gone forth, lo, the prince of Grecia shall come. But I will show thee that which is not noted in the scripture of truth, and there is none that holdeth with me in these things but Michael your prince. Also in the first year of Darius the Mede, even I stood to confirm and strengthen him. And so here we see that there are princes of Persia, princes of Greece, and Michael, who is the prince of your people. So Michael is the prince of Daniel's people, the Israelites. So he's as influential as a spiritual influence among the nation of Israel, and certainly a protector of it. But then there are princes of Persia. Persia, of course, was the present threat in Daniel's time. Actually, it was about to be the threat. This vision is given... No, I'm sorry, this is much later. So this is actually during the time of the kings of Persia. So the spiritual influence, the demon that had spiritual influence among the kings, resisted Christ coming to speak with Daniel on this occasion. And then he mentioned again in verse 20 that there was a prince of Grecia that was to come. And so after the Persian Empire was the Greeks, and evidently even at this time, there was some activity among the satanic influence of the kingdom of Greece. And yet these descriptions, so though they are very unique and interesting, cause us to realize that there are spiritual influences behind the nation's activities. So then, let's also look at Ephesians 3:10. This then leads into different descriptions in the New Testament that talk about principalities and powers in the heavenly places, which would be not only good angels, but also unholy angels that have influence in the heavenly realm. So Ephesians chapter 3, verse 10. To the intent that now unto the principalities and powers in heavenly places might be known by the church the manifold wisdom of God. So these principalities and powers are in the heavenly places. Turn the page to chapter 6, verse 12. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against principalities, against powers, against the rulers of the darkness of this world, against spiritual wickedness in high places. Certainly heaven is one of those high places, heavenly places, where they currently reside. And of course, this is all preparing us for the next verses of Revelation, where there's a battle with Michael, and they are going to be kicked out of heaven and no longer reside in heaven. But just to look at a few more, let's turn to Colossians chapter 2, verse 15. Chapter 2, verse 15, where it says of Christ, and having spoiled principalities and powers, he made a show of them openly, triumphing over them in it, that is, in the cross. And so he overcame them at the cross. We can also go back to Colossians 1, verse 16. Where it says that God ultimately is the one who made all these. Verse 16, for by him were all things created that are in heaven and that are in earth, visible and invisible, whether they be thrones or dominions or principalities or powers, all things were created by him and for him. And so he has his part even in establishing their positions of authority that these demonic forces now occupy. And then one last one, Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. And of course, a wonderful passage that reminds us that even though they have such authority given to them, they cannot separate us from the love of Christ. So Romans chapter 8, verse 38. Where it says, for I am persuaded that neither death nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature, shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. And so, though the dragon is currently in heaven and does have sway over the nations, and to some degree has influence even in the court of heaven, as we see him gaining permission to test Job and to try Job and to prove in his mind that he could cause Job to curse God and die. Nevertheless, nothing can separate us from the love of God. He will continue to be our support and strength through all the testings and trials the devil brings against us, and even through the great tribulation that this passage is getting us closer and closer to thinking about. So, again, Revelation chapter 12, the dragon's tail is what draws the one-third of the stars down out of heaven and causes them to be thrown to the earth. I'm not a particularly fond of all the interpretations of the symbolic meanings, but we can imagine that maybe the tail in particular may focus on the latter part of the devil's influence, as he is about to be kicked out of heaven, and he knows that he will only have a short time remaining. So possibly that is a symbolic meaning of the devil's authority at his latter end, having this power to cast these one-third of the stars to Earth. It does mention that it's one-third of the stars, a reminder that we are in the midst of the trumpets. We mentioned before when we first began with the trumpets that one-third is throughout all the trumpets, whether that was a third of the sun, moon, and stars being darkened, or a third of the ships being destroyed in the sea. Throughout the trumpets, we have seen one-third being a significant number. And here we see one-third of the stars being cast into the lake, or into the to the earth. But then we come to what does the meaning of the stars mean? And here we go back to, first off, Job chapter 38, verse 7. Job 38:7. Because there is reason why those that understand the stars to be cast down, that they do understand this to be angels. Job 38:7 would be one of the passages that they would look at, where God says to Job, starting verse 6, I guess, "Whereupon are the foundations thereof fastened? Or who laid the cornerstone thereof, when the morning stars sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy?" So the sons of God refers to the angels, and therefore in parallel fashion, the morning stars also refers to the angels. So when the morning stars, the angels sang together, and the sons of God shouted for joy. And so there are various passages where you can see that stars represent the angels. And we can certainly understand why, as they are angels of light that may appear as stars, and therefore the connection in a more poetic way is pretty clear. Let's turn to Isaiah 14:12. Isaiah 14:12. Isaiah 14:12, somewhat of a familiar verse, speaking against Satan, where it says, "How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? How art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations?" A reference, of course, to Satan, a reference that he has fallen from heaven. This will be a passage that we can refer to when he does get finally kicked out of heaven. Not that it's happened yet, but it's going to happen in the future. And he's called Lucifer, or if you look at the Hebrew, it's shining one. And he's the son of the morning, or the son of the dawn. So the bright and morning star, Christ eventually is going to be called the morning star, but Lucifer pretends and seeks to put himself there in the place of Christ as the morning star. We can look at Luke chapter 10, verse 18. Luke chapter 10, verse 18. This is the prophecy of Jesus as he looks into the future and sees Satan being cast down out of heaven. And he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. So a bright flash, uses the phrase lightning rather than a star, but essentially the same image could be seen of Satan falling from heaven. This is sometimes used to indicate that Satan has already fallen from heaven, not that he's going to in the future, but he already has, because here Christ says, I beheld Satan in the past as lightning fall from heaven. But Christ is speaking as a prophet. There was a point in the past, maybe the past few days, maybe the past year, whatever, when he had the prophecy, and that's when he beheld in the prophecy, in the vision, Satan falling from heaven. And so that explains why he speaks of it in the past tense. I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven, even though the actual event, as we see in Revelation, is yet to be future. And then Romans chapter, Revelation chapter 9. Revelation 9. And I just remind you of interpretation that some have had concerning this star when the fifth angel sounded. Revelation 9 verse 1. And the fifth angel sounded, and I saw a star fall from heaven unto the earth. And it continues. And that when we talked about this passage, I mentioned that some understand that star to be the devil being cast out of heaven. And if so, then this expression in chapter 9, verse 1, gives us the actual time in which the war in heaven would occur, and Satan would be kicked out of heaven. And if so, then Satan is described there as a star. So there's these verses and probably several others that those that understand the stars being drawn and thrown out of heaven onto the earth in chapter 12 would refer to these being angels, and particularly the demons that followed Satan in his rebellion. But let's go back to Daniel chapter 8. Let's go back to Daniel chapter 8. Because as we have, I think, sufficiently proven even up to this point, it is the rest of Scripture that directs us in understanding what Revelation means, and very clearly identifies what these visions imply. So what are the stars? Well, we see in Daniel chapter 8, and I'm going to read through the whole prophecy here and then focus on the particular verses, because I also want to, after this, introduce us to 1 Maccabees chapter 1, where we're going to see the parallels with this prophecy, and also at the same time, it really broadens our understanding to understand what other prophecies concerning the Great Tribulation to come, how that actually may materialize, fearful as it may seem to be. So Daniel chapter 8. In the third year of the reign of King Belshazzar, a vision appeared unto me, even unto me Daniel, after the which appeared unto me at the first. And I saw in a vision, and it came to pass, when I saw, that I was at Shushan in the palace, which is in the province of Elam. And I saw in a vision, and I was by the river Eulat. Then I lifted up mine eyes and saw, and behold, there stood before the river a ram which had two horns. And the two horns were high, but one was higher than the other. And the higher came up last. I saw the ram pushing westward and northward and southward, so that no beast might stand before him. Neither was there any that could deliver out of his hand. But he did according to his will and became great. And as I was considering, behold, an he-goat came from the west on the face of the whole earth and touched not the ground, and the goat had a notable horn between his eyes. And he came to the ram that had two horns, which I had seen standing before the river, and ran unto him in the fury of his power, and I saw him come close unto the ram, and he was moved with choler against him, and smote the ram, and brake his two horns. And there was no power in the ram to stand before him, but he cast him down to the ground, and stamped upon him. And there was none that could deliver the ram out of his hand. Therefore the he-goat waxed very great, and when he was strong, the great horn was broken. And for it came up four notable ones toward the four winds of heaven. And out of one of them came forth a little horn, which waxed exceeding great. The little horn we're going to see is Antiochus Epiphanes, which 1 Maccabees describes what he does. He waxed exceedingly great toward the south and toward the east and toward the pleasant land, the land of Israel. And it was waxed great even to the host of heaven. In other words, this horn, little as it was, grew and grew in the vision, so much so that it went so high as the stars of heaven. Let's see, verse 10. And it waxed great even to the host of heaven, and it cast down some of the host and of the stars to the ground and stamped upon them. That is exactly what the dragon does. It wraps its tail around the stars of heaven and casts them to the ground. It doesn't say that it actually stomps those stars, but it does say that it casts the stars to the ground. And of course, this is an amazing vision, because a horn would not grow so high. This is definitely a very amazing vision. Verse 11. Yea, he magnified himself even to the prince of the host, which is God himself, as he exalts himself and says that he is as God. Magnifies himself even to the prince of the host, and by him the daily sacrifice was taken away, and the place of his sanctuary, which is the prince of the host sanctuary, was cast down. In other words, that's a reference to the temple being cast down. And then host was given him against the daily sacrifice by reason of transgression. When we read in Maccabees, this host that is set against the daily sacrifices, how they build a fort in Jerusalem so that the army of Antiochus can keep the righteous from taking control of the temple again. So that will come to play in Maccabees. And it cast down the truth to the ground, and it practiced and prospered. So the little horn cast the truth to the ground, burning the law of God, as we'll see. Verse 13. Then I heard one saint speaking, and another saint said unto that certain saint which spake, How long shall be the vision concerning the daily sacrifice and the transgression of desolation, to give both the sanctuary, and notice, not only the sanctuary, but the host, to be trodden underfoot? So the stars, the host, are trodden down underfoot. Verse 14. And he said unto me, Unto 2,300 days, then shall the sanctuary be cleansed. And it came to pass, when I, Daniel, had seen the vision and sought for the meaning, then behold, there stood before me as the appearance of a man, and I heard a man's voice between the banks of Uli, which called and said, Gabriel, make this man to understand the vision. So he came near where I stood, and when he came, I was afraid and fell upon my face. But he said unto me, Understand, O son of man, for at the time of the end shall be the vision. Now as he was speaking with me, I was in a deep sleep on my face toward the ground, but he touched me and set me upright. And he said, Behold, I will make thee know what shall be in the last end of the indignation, for at the time appointed the end shall be. The ram which thou sawest having two horns are the kings of Media and Persia, and the rough goat is the king of Grecia, which is Alexander the Great. And the great horn that is between his eyes is the first king, Alexander the Great. Verse 22. Now that being broken, whereas four stood up for it, four kingdoms shall stand up out of the nation and not in his power. The four generals that are divide up the kingdom of Alexander after Alexander dies. Verse 23. And in the latter time of their kingdom, when the transgressors are come to the full, a king of fierce countenance and understanding dark sentences shall stand up, and his power shall be mighty. This is a reference to the little horn, which is Antiochus Epiphanes. And his power shall be mighty, but not by his own power. And he shall destroy wonderfully, and shall prosper in practice, and shall destroy the mighty and the holy people. So what are the stars? What are the hosts of heaven and the stars? Here it just said that they are those that are destroyed, the mighty and the holy people. So the stars shining in their glory represents the holy people of Israel that were killed by Antiochus. Verse 25. And through his policy also he shall cause craft to prosper in his hand, and he shall magnify himself in his heart, and by peace shall destroy many. He shall also stand up against the prince of princes, God himself, but he shall be broken without hand, and the vision of the evening and the morning which was told is true. Wherefore shut thou up the vision, for it shall be for many days. And I, Daniel, fainted and was sick certain days. Afterward I rose up and did the king's business, and I was astonished at the vision, but none understood it. And so understanding the meaning of the stars being cast to the earth is to understand the clear reference of the dragon gathering one-third of the stars of heaven and throwing them to the earth as well. It is a reference to the Israelites that will be attacked on that occasion. So now I want to read 1 Maccabees chapter 1. It parallels what we just read of Daniel's prophecy well before the time of the Maccabees, as God foretells events many hundreds of years even before they happen. You certainly could find a translation of 1 Maccabees and 2 Maccabees for that matter online if you wanted to. And I'm not sure what the different translations, how much they differ from each other, but this is the one that I will read. 1 Maccabees chapter 1. And it happened after that Alexander, the son of Philip, the Macedonian, came out of the land of Chittim, had smitten Darius, king of the Persians and Medes, that he reigned in his stead, the first over Greece. Kind of here as the author of the Maccabees, I'm not sure who that was, as he describes this, he clearly has Daniel in his mind as well as the historical events. So Alexander, the first king, defeats the kings of the Persians and the Medes, and made wars and won many strongholds and slew the kings of the earth and went through the ends of the earth and took spoils of many nations, insomuch that the earth was quiet before him. Whereupon he was exalted and his heart was lifted up. And he gathered a mighty strong host and ruled over countries and nations and kings who became tributaries unto him. And after these things he fell sick and perceived that he should die. Wherefore he called his servants, such as were honorable and had been brought up with him from his youth, and parted his kingdom among them while he was yet alive. So he divides his kingdom among the generals. So Alexander reigned 12 years and then died, and his servants bare rule, every one in his place. And after his death, they all put crowns upon themselves, so did their sons after them many years, and evils were multiplied in the earth. And there came out of them a wicked root, Antiochus, surnamed Epiphanes. So again, the language is very clearly referring back to Daniel. And Antiochus is this little horn, and he's surnamed Epiphanes, which means God manifest. So he declares himself to be God. He's son of Antiochus the king, who had been a hostage of Rome. And so that kind of implies why he's considered a little horn. He was one that had right to the throne, but he was a captive in Rome and was made very small. But yet he grew so much that he became very braggadocious and declared himself to be God. But that gives us the character of why he's a little horn. And that will help us understand a little bit more about why the Antichrist is also a little horn. Who had been a hostage at Rome, and he reigned in the 137th year of the kingdom of the Greeks. In those days went there out of Israel wicked men, who persuaded many, saying, "Let us go and make a covenant with the heathen that are round about us. For since we departed from them, we have had much sorrow." So there were Israelites that were trying to get the other Israelites to Hellenize, as the term is, and become Greek like the other Greeks. So this device pleased them well. Then certain of the people were so forward herein that they went to the king, who gave them license to do after the ordinances of the heathen. Whereupon they built a place of exercise at Jerusalem, according to the custom of the heathen. So they built a gymnasium there, and made themselves uncircumcised, and forsook the holy covenant, and joined themselves to the heathen, and were sold to do mischief. So that's what some of the Israelites did. Now when the kingdom was established before Antiochus, he thought to reign over Egypt, that he might have the dominion of two realms. Wherefore he entered into Egypt with great multitude, with chariots and elephants and horsemen and a great navy, and made war against Ptolemy, king of Egypt. But Ptolemy was afraid of him and fled, and many were wounded to death. Thus they got the strong cities in the land of Egypt, and he took the spoils thereof. And after that Antiochus had smitten Egypt, he returned again in the 143rd year and went up against Israel and Jerusalem with a great multitude. So now he's going to attack Israel, just as one day the Antichrist is going to attack Israel as well. And entered proudly into the sanctuary, the temple, and took away the golden altar and the candlestick of light and all the vessels thereof, and the table of the showbread and the pouring vessels and the vials and the censers of gold and the veil and the crown and the golden ornaments that were before the temple, all which he pulled off. He took also the silver and the gold and the precious vessels. Also he took the hidden treasures which he found. And when he had taken all away, he went into his own land, having made a great massacre and spoken very proudly. We're going to see several of these verses could refer to the stars that are being thrown down to earth. Here he makes a great massacre of the Israelites. Therefore there was a great mourning in Israel in every place where they were, so that the princes and elders mourned, the virgins and young men were made feeble, and the beauty of women was changed. Every bridegroom took up lamentation, and she that sat in the marriage chamber was in heaviness. The land also was moved for the inhabitants thereof, and all the house of Jacob was covered with confusion. And after 2 years fully expired, the king sent his chief collector of tribute unto the cities of Judah, who came unto Jerusalem with a great multitude, and spake peaceable words unto them, but all was deceit. For when they had given him credence, he fell suddenly upon the city, and smote it very sore, and destroyed much people of Israel. Again, another opportunity for the stars to be cast down from heaven. And when he had taken the spoils of the city, he set it on fire and pulled down the houses and walls thereof on every side. But the women and children took they captive and possessed the cattle. Then builded they the city of David with a great and strong wall and with mighty towers, and made it a stronghold for them. This is the reference to that army that he sets against the sanctuary to prevent the Israelites from coming in and taking the temple back. So they build up a stronghold there in Jerusalem. And they put therein a sinful nation, wicked men, and fortified themselves therein. They stored it also with armor and victuals. And when they had gathered together the spoils of Jerusalem, they laid them up there, and so they became a sore snare. For it was a place to lie in wait against the sanctuary, and an evil adversary to Israel. So again, it was set against the temple. Thus they shed innocent blood on every side of the sanctuary and defiled it, more stars falling from heaven, insomuch that the inhabitants of Jerusalem fled because of them, whereupon the city was made a habitation of strangers and became strange to those who were born in her, and her own children left her. It's interesting how he refers to the city of Jerusalem as a woman, her children, leaving her, kind of how we see the woman in Revelation chapter 12, Jerusalem being a woman. It also speaks about the desolation of the city, the abomination of desolation that the Antichrist is going to set up is similar to this, how all the righteous flee from the city, and the city is desolate of all the righteous, even though it's currently inhabited by the Gentiles, and they control the city. So this is all, again, related to the future as well. Her sanctuary was laid waste like a wilderness. Her feasts were turned into mourning, her Sabbaths into reproach, her honor into contempt. And this is where it's going to start affecting the people's religion. And I think I understand this to be why the man of sin is called the man of lawlessness, as he fights against the law of God, more particularly, not just civil government or some other understanding of law, but particularly against God's law. And he's going to seek to change time and seasons, the various feasts and celebrations that the law establishes, and circumcision and so forth, as we see in this passage. So 1 Maccabees 1:39 is where I'm at. Her sanctuary was laid waste like a wilderness. Her feasts were turned into mourning, her Sabbaths into reproach, her honor into contempt. As had been her glory, so was her dishonor increased, and her excellency was turned into mourning. Moreover, King Antiochus wrote to his whole kingdom that all should be one people, and everyone should leave his laws, for the Israelites, the law of God. So all the heathen agreed according to the commandment of the king. Yea, many also of the Israelites consented to his religion, and sacrificed unto idols and profaned the Sabbath. For the king had sent letters by messengers unto Jerusalem and the cities of Judah that they should follow the strange laws of the land, and forbid burnt offerings and sacrifices and drink offerings in the temple, and that they should profane the Sabbaths and festival days. Daniel 8 refers to how there were no sacrifices throughout this period of time. And pollute the sanctuary and the holy people, set up altars and groves and chapels of idols, and sacrifice swine's flesh and unclean beasts, that they should also leave their children uncircumcised, and make their souls abominable with all manner of uncleanness and profanation, to the end they might forget the law and change all the ordinances. A man of lawlessness. And whosoever would not do according to the commandment of the king, he said he should die. In the selfsame manner wrote he to his whole kingdom, and appointed overseers over all the people, commanding the cities of Judah to sacrifice city by city. Then many of the people were gathered unto them, to wit, every one that forsook the law, and so they committed evils in the land. So we see the Israelites, some of them consenting to this changing of the religion. And drove the Israelites into secret places, even wheresoever they could flee for succor. Similar to how Jesus tells the Israelites to flee to the mountains so that they can be safe. This sets up the time of the Maccabean rebellion, but it will also similarly set up the time for the rebellion of those who are faithful to God against the Antichrist till they come. Now the 15th day of the month Kislew, in the 145th year, they set up the abomination of desolation upon the altar, and builded idol altars throughout the cities of Judah on every side, and burnt incense at the doors of their houses and in the streets. And when they had rent in pieces the books of the law which they found, they burnt them with fire. It's a specific attack against the written law of God. And whosoever was found with any of the book of the testament, or if any committed to the law, the king's commandment was that they should be put to death. Thus did they by their authority unto the Israelites every month, to as many as were found in the cities. Now the 25th day of the month, they did sacrifice upon the idol altar, which was upon the altar of God. So they put a false altar on top of the true altar of God. At which time, according to the commandment, they put to death certain women that had caused their children to be circumcised. And they hanged the infants about their necks, and rifled their houses, and slew them that had circumcised them. Howbeit many in Israel were fully resolved and confirmed in themselves not to eat anything, any unclean thing. And so in spite of many of the Israelites turning away from God, this only hardened the hearts of those that were resolved to follow God, and they were more determined to be faithful to Him. Wherefore the rather to die, that they might not be defiled with meats, and that they might not profane the holy covenant, so then they died. And there was very great wrath upon Israel. And that is chapter 1 of 1 Maccabees. But as you read that chapter, as I partly reflected, prophecies both of Antiochus, we see in chapter 8, but also the prophecies of the Antichrist yet to come, we can see how that may materialize, similar to how Antiochus Epiphanes showed himself to the Israelites back then. So it definitely is a time of great fear and concern, but we also see that it is a time of relief. So in Revelation chapter 12, we have explained the woman, we have explained the dragon, and casting the stars, a third of the stars down. We spoke about the male child that's born and carried up into heaven. And then let me just quickly make reference to verse 6. And the woman fled into the wilderness, where she had a place prepared of God, that they should feed her there 1,260 days. That is the time of the great tribulation, the time when the greatest of all tribulations that the people of God have ever gone through or will ever go through occurs under the hand of the Antichrist. But, as it says here, she goes to the wilderness. The wilderness is the place of the mountains, place of where David fled from Saul and wandered about was able to stay safe from Saul. It is the place where the Maccabees go to, and they are able to build up their resistance against Antiochus and ultimately win. This is a place where the woman flees, those that flee from Jerusalem. They flee to this place that God has prepared. It's not a place that they prepare for themselves. This is not a day that anybody's truly preparing for as much as they should. But God has a place prepared for them because he cares for them and is going to care through them for them even through this time of persecution. That they should feed her there 1,260 days. I was going to take us back into Daniel where it refers several times to they, that subject there. They should feed her there. It doesn't say who they are, but when we go back to the language of Daniel, we see that these are the watchers, the angels, that do various things in Daniel, and they're just referred to as they. It doesn't describe who they actually are. They are the watchers. And in some way, somehow, God uses his servants, the angels, to feed the people of God throughout this time of 1,260 days. And so it is a time of great fear and worry, a time when they will no longer care about riches and wealth and all the things we think about possibly on a day-by-day basis. They will be just thinking about survival. And about staying faithful to God, and possibly very mindful that their lives may end, but they are determined to stay faithful to God, even unto death. That is what they'll be mindful of. And yet God will provide for each of them in the midst of that time in a ways that we have yet to see. The goodness of God will be demonstrated.